interview with Ned McWherter, M-C-W-H-E-R-T-E-R, Speaker of the Tennessee House of Representatives, Dresden, D-R-E-S-D-E-N, Tennessee, August 20th, 1974.
A little bit about the legislature in Tennessee and how it works, and the role of Speaker, for one thing. The Speaker, is that an office in which the Speaker often succeeds himself?
Well, the Speakers in the history of Tennessee, in the years of the Ellington Clement organization, the Speakers usually served at the desire and discretion of the Governor Clement or Governor Ellington. As you know, they held office some 16 to 20 years.
Right.
And when the Republican Governor Winfield Dunn was elected governor, the first Republican, I believe, in some 50 years, then the Speaker's office was up for grabs. And as a rule, up until that time, they had served at the pleasure of the governor, and since that time, the legislative branches become predominant in being independent and had started a trend of independency before the Republican governor was elected. And now it's just strictly a matter of the legislature, the members of the legislature, the party that controls the House or the Senate, electing their own speaker. They've become absolutely an independent branch of government, which they should be.
And it's been pretty much a question of the party caucus.
No question about the party caucus. The first 2 years under the Dunn administration, I was chairman of the Democratic caucus in the House, and we elected Mr. McKinney, and then I run against Mr. McKinney and defeated him in the second legislative term of the four-year term of the governor.
And am I correct that during that, the race really was within the Democratic caucus? You defeated him in the caucus, and once that, then all Democrats voted for you.
That's correct. I defeated former Speaker McKinney in the caucus, and then all 51 Democrats in the House supported me.
Because all it would have taken would have been a defection at that time of two.
That two defections would have defeated me. That's correct.
And The impression I get is that within the legislature, that and particularly in the House, that party unity is pretty strong, and that is there any form of party discipline imposed, or has it come up?
Well, of course, under my past administration, I appointed a committee, that I call the Blue Ribbon House Modernization Committee, and we completely changed the operation of the House. Story really being that the only modernization of the legislature in the House in the past 50 or 60 years or 75 years came with the invention of the typewriter. That's about the only change we had. And we changed the committee system under my administration. We changed the clerk system of the House. We
what
print a
changes?
Daily journal now.
You print a daily journal now?
We print a daily journal.
What does the daily journal contain?
Well, of course, the Daily Journal is printed at night after our session is over, and it contains all the legislation and all the pertinent details relating to what happened on the floor that day, and it's published the next morning at the legislator's desk.
Does that include all roll call votes?
Yes.
That's something new, am I correct?
That's definitely new. In other words, when you vote in the House today, there's no changing of your vote at any later time. Recorded that day and that night, it's printed out for the public, and it's definitely a roll call vote.
The old system that I've heard about then, in which a member could go back and change his vote as long as it didn't change the outcome of the bill.
That's true. That's correct. In years past, it's been, I don't know, I wouldn't say it's been a practice. It has been done that a man would be coming up for re-election.
Could that still be done?
That cannot be done. It cannot be done after the journal is printed on the same night of the legislative meeting that day.
Can it be done after the between the meeting and the printing?
No, the policy about our daily journal on roll call vote is that you can go up to the chief clerk of the House and tell him to print into the journal that you voted yea or nay and you desire that your vote be changed, but the vote will not be changed. Your statement will be reflected in the journal. That's in case a man actually made an honest mistake.
The actual debate proceedings are not printed. Am I correct?
The actual debate itself are not printed totally into the journal. That's correct. Into the daily journal. Motions and all pertinent facts are printed in regards to any bill that's on the floor.
Is the same true in the Senate?
The Senate, no, it is not. The Senate does not at this time have a daily journal. However, I'm advised by the Speaker of the Senate that they plan to institute the program this year. It was really a matter of moving into the unknowns as to whether or not we could do it with our present equipment.
Yeah.
And keep the cost in line, and we were able by, I have a very efficient and aggressive young clerk of the House that joined my organization, and I came to be Speaker.
What were the changes in the committee system that you
The changes in the committee system basically were that I appointed all Democrats to the officers of the committee. I followed the United States Congress in this manner, and since one major change was that since the Highway Department of Transportation, and that park department is one of our three largest budgetary departments, that we broke the Highway Department out from under the so-called General Welfare Committee that handles, General Welfare Committee in the past handled public health, mental health, and the Department of Transportation. And we felt that Department of Transportation, along with education, should require separate committee.
So you now have how many committees?
We have 10 committees and standing committees and one calendar and rules committee.
Does the Senate have the same committee structure?
No, the Senate's some different than we are. They don't have as many committees. Basically, the reason being that the legislature in Tennessee, the House is made up of 99 members and the Senate's made up of 33 members. And consequently, we have much more legislation introduced and to handle than the Senate does.
Does each Senate senatorial district consist of three House districts?
Basically speaking, they do, but some House districts overlap into other senatorial districts. But basically, three House districts would not necessarily in all cases be conform to the boundaries of one Senate district.
Do you expect the Democrats to retain a majority in both houses of the legislature? Well, in the House.
It's very evident in the Senate they'll retain a majority since they have a substantial majority today, and they only have two or three contested races. In the House, we have most of our, I believe at the present time, we have 29 Democrats that do not have opposition. We have five Democrats, most of them are incumbents, that have only token independent opposition. So we basically figure today that we have 34 Democrats that are elected, and we have 15 Republicans without opposition. I think we'll improve our majority, and I don't have any question about it. We'll improve, we'll add an additional black seat in Chattanooga, Tennessee. We'll retain all of our black seats in Memphis and Nashville, Tennessee. And we feel now that we will pick up a number of seats in the rural white communities and also the urban communities. The real change in the legislature in the last few years is that the Democrats have been losing in the urban areas of Shelby County, Hamilton County, and Knox County. That's been the pattern.
But within the non-urban areas of the state then, Republicans so far made few inroads?
Well, off the top of my head, they made an inroad in Gibson County, which we'll definitely pick up this time. They made one in Tipton County, which we have a real good chance of picking up this time. I don't think they've taken over two or three rural seats from the Democrats in the last 4 years.
Got to understand that Annabelle Clement O'Brien has a very good chance of picking up what's been a traditional Republican seat.
We're counting her as a winner. We have her down now as a winner. Definitely. We think she'll win.
And that's a seat now held by Republicans.
And has traditionally been held by Republicans.
How do you... what sort of a role do you expect her to play in the legislature, considering the level of her experience being different from most freshmen?
She'll be probably the most valuable freshman that's ever entered the House of the House in the last 20 years because of the legislative independence today, and with her background in government and her knowledge of the needs of the people of Tennessee, and her also knowledge of how the legislative process works. Being a freshman, she'll be invaluable as an asset to the Democratic Party.
What's the most important and prestigious House committee?
We would say today that the most, let's change the word prestigious to most important.
All right.
The most important House committee today is the Finance, Ways and Means Committee, which is chaired by Representative Bragg from Murfreesboro, and he is probably the most knowledgeable man of state government and state finances today on Capitol Hill, and would rank up with the Commissioner of Financial Administration and knowledge of state government and state expenses and state requirements of the dollars that we have available. He's an excellent man, owns a printing company, he's able to spend almost 75 to 100% of his time in state government.
Does the speaker designate the chairman of the committee?
The speaker designates at his discretion, makes appointments, chairman, vice chairman, and secretary, and makes all assignments to committees from the total membership.
What has been your policy in regard to Republican committee assignments?
My policy has been, when I became speaker, it's very evident from the record speaks for itself that I tried to pattern the Tennessee House in the way of appointments from the United States Congress. I feel like that if my leadership as speaker, it's going to be a reflection of the record of whatever progress the legislature makes, that I should control the committees. And I appointed all Democrats, which were very able men, to chairmanships. I feel like if we're responsible as the majority party in the House and the controlling party, that we should operate the House, and we take whatever credit that should be given, and we take whatever criticism that should be.
How about in regard to proportion of seats on the committees? Is it uniform, or is it more Democrats on some committees and less on others?
Yes, some committees. My Finance, Ways and Means Committee is controlled by the Democratic Party. I try to advise with the Republican leadership in the House as to where their men should be, what committees they would better serve on, more ably can serve on. This has a lot to do with where the Republican appointments go. But there are some committees, for example, the Finance, Ways and Means, that handles the appropriation and the budget. And you know, Ken, under our state constitution, we have the three branches of government, the executive and the legislative and the judiciary. And can a dollar be spent unless it's appropriated by the House and the Senate? The government just carries out the program that we appropriate dollars for.
How many members on that committee?
We had the average committee will range from a low of 16 to about a high 22 to 24, and the Finance Ways and Means Committee would usually have 18 to 20 members.
Then how many are Democrats were the last time?
I would say that out of the 20 members, I think we had probably we had a 14 majority, just off the top of my head.
Did any of the committees have Republican majorities?
Oh, yes. The Transportation Committee, I recall, had a Republican majority, and I know the Conservation Committee had a Republican majority. Some of the committees were evenly apportioned. But going back, the committee that handles the appropriation bill, I felt should be controlled by the leadership of the House, because it's a reflection on what we do, and we want some input into the appropriation bill.
Did you appoint any blacks, either as committee chairman or vice chairman?
I appointed a black chairman of the Judiciary Committee.
Who was that?
Ira Murphy from Shelby County. I think it's the first black that probably chaired a committee in many, many, many years. And I also appointed the first black in the clerk's office that I don't recall in history when they had a black that was on the speaker's staff as the assistant clerk.
The Judiciary Committee considered a major committee?
Yes, the Judiciary Committee be considered a major committee, and due to the fact that, we handled much legislation in regards to the Missouri plan and made the change in the Missouri plan to elect our Supreme Court by the people. And also in consideration of the no-fault bills in all states now, and the consideration being given at the national level. It's a very important
committee. Did no-fault pass the House?
That's the funny thing. No-fault, the governor's so-called no-fault bill has passed the House. It didn't pass the Senate. We had a special committee make a study of no-fault then this past year. And Representative Roger Murray from Madison County was chairman of it, and they made a study and came back with a recommendation of the so-called Delaware plan, and that passed the House. And also the bill known in the Tennessee legislature as the Davis-Baker bill, Senator Davis and Senator Baker, passed the House. Three different no-fault bills passed the House of Representatives. None of them passed the Senate.
Is the Farm Bureau the strongest lobby in Tennessee?
I wouldn't say the Farm Bureau is the strongest lobby in Tennessee. I say the Farm Bureau is a very effective lobby in Tennessee. I have studied the organizations that do lobby in the House and given much consideration to it. The Farm Bureau has a unique way. They try to concern themselves with things that only pertain to their people. They never get into issues that don't pertain to the farmer in Tennessee, or they, of course, they have their insurance company that they're concerned about. They would be considered a strong, effective group in Tennessee, I'd say. I would not say they'd be the strongest.
Who would be?
I don't know that you have the strongest as such. You have, of course, as in all states, you have the labor group, you have the banking interest. This year we had some strong feelings about state and federal savings and loans. I would probably say the strongest individual group and the most active in Tennessee Education.
Are they concerned primarily with teacher pay and that type issue? Or?
Well, of course, that's one of their issues, but in all fairness to TEA, they're concerned, and I'm very pleased about this. They're really concerned with the total educational program in the state, teachers' salaries. Of course, they represent the teachers. Naturally, they're concerned about that. But the truth is that Tennessee, the teachers were very low paid. And one of the problems being that we were making contributions at the state level, but actually the contributions at the local support level never kept up with the state dollars we were putting into education. So they're concerned about the teacher pay naturally. I'd say that was one of their top priorities, but they're concerned also about the total system, the supplies, and the various things. In their program, I think if you look at it, you'll see that they're concerned about the reducing of the student-teacher ratio. They're concerned about the supplies, getting more money for supplies in the schoolrooms.
How effective have the black legislators been as a group? And working as a group?
The black legislators in all, total, in my judgment, have been effective in the legislature for their people. We're fortunate to have, in my judgment, very able black people in the legislature. They're very level-headed legislators as a whole. There are exceptions. But as a group, they ask for reasonable, fair treatment, and they've been given fair treatment by most all legislators. I'd say they are effective and are becoming more effective for their people.
They, in effect, trade, and I don't mean that word in a bad sense necessarily. And I ask it also in the context of the fact that Tennessee is unique in the South in having this number of black legislators in a legislature that's so close to being evenly divided between Republican and Democrat. So it gives them a balance of power.
They naturally would have did have the balance of power with 51 Democrats in the House this year. But the black people of Tennessee and the black legislators of Tennessee, in my judgment, make reasonable requests. And they could have been in a position of trading, but I would say that our black legislative members came to us in the spirit of negotiating, and we were able to accommodate some of the requests that they had that we all felt comfortable with. I think in the South, my knowledge of politics is that I consider myself an old-timey Democrat, Tennessee Democrat, that I've educated myself to the fact that the blacks do have problems and they need more response from the legislature and they need more response from leadership. And I think that those of us in leadership should be more responsive to the black community and the black people. And I, going in all around, in a roundabout way to answer your question, my leadership has been receptive to what the blacks need, and I want to be in the future. And I plan to be, and I, of course, plan to be reelected, and will be in the future.
Will you get
we
black?
Are able to work with the blacks, I'll put it that way.
Do you expect to get black support in your re-election attempt?
I already have endorsed black support in Shelby County and Davidson, and we'll have one black seat, the first black seat in Chattanooga, which we redrew the district to show you some concern we have. Chattanooga has a large black population. And the two Democrats that were in Chattanooga and my leadership felt that the blacks should have representation by a seat in the House. And we so drew this seat this last year, and a black will be coming to the House from that district, Chattanooga, in 1975.
Republicans say that the seat, the whole legislative district, statewide, the seats were redrawn to maximize the number of potential Democrats.
Well, of course, I think that the record speaks itself there, because when the legislature was reapportioned, the Republican gained seats. We had 56 2 years ago. We had 51 this past year. So I think the record speaks for itself.
How would you characterize the state of the Democratic Party in Tennessee?
Well, I think the true characteristic of the Democratic Party in Tennessee has definitely been in shambles for the last 2 to 4 years. I think that Tennessee enjoyed an excellent executive branch under Frank Clement in the years of Clement and Elliott. Clement particularly was an outstanding administrator that faced up to the needs of the people of Tennessee at the time that the needs were there. I think he'll go down in history as one of our better governors. I think since that time that with the maybe the problem with the Democratic Party of Tennessee is that we haven't offered candidates in a Democratic Party that were acceptable to the people, the populace across the state. And this I mean that Tennessee today, in my judgment, is no longer a democratically controlled or Republican controlled state. I don't think any man can be elected to a statewide office strictly with a Democratic vote or with a Republican vote. You have to get the independent vote, and you have to offer candidates that can get the Democratic vote and also that can get the independent vote in the state.
Does the lack of a runoff provision weaken the Democratic Party in selecting statewide candidates?
Well, our leadership felt that we should have had a runoff bill. I think, yes, it does, is the answer to your question. Next would be that we will introduce a runoff bill this year and pass it. We, the Democratic Party, the leadership in the House, introduced a runoff bill in the last session and passed it, and the Republican governor vetoed.
But his veto was not overridden.
His veto was not overridden. We will pass it. If we have the majority in the House this year, we think we'll have, and with the Senate in the control it has, we'll pass a runoff bill, and that will become law, either by the governor's signature or override. I predict runoff bill will be law in Tennessee next year, and I'm for it.
Could you explain to me and why the opposition to state income tax is so strong in Tennessee? And do you think that the state will eventually have a state income tax?
Well, I think that our forefathers that wrote our state constitution were right, probably, in prohibiting us from having a state income tax. I don't know the so-called sales tax in our state is becoming so regressive on the working man and the small businessman that if we have a state income tax, we must have tax relief for these people written into the law or written into the constitutional change, in my judgment. I started out a very poor boy, and when I got out of high school, I went to work. I was not able to go to college. I come from a rural farm community type family environment, and I've been more fortunate maybe than other people, and I pay my taxes every year. But I guess since I've gotten to the point in life I'm in now that I know how tough it is when you start out, and I know how tough it is today on the people that are working and trying to make a living in this two-digit inflation that we have. And I'm concerned about the man that really carries the tax burden and tax load in our state, and that's the working man, and that's the small businessman. in a company of the size that I operate or the business community today, we just pass on inflation. We have to maintain our profit structure. So the tax don't hurt us that much, I don't believe it. It won't change my standard of living. But I am concerned about the people that work and the small business people that I've always been known, came up through that environment and associated with. They, if you're going to put an income tax on them, it can't be put onto them in additional taxes. It's got to go on the more affluent, and it's got to be aggregate.
Do you think the call for the next Constitutional Convention will allow discussion of that issue?
I'm not sure. I've been trying to get a feel of the people. I think that if a state income tax is to be passed, or a constitutional call, and it's passed in Tennessee, as you know, I'm sure you know, our state, the procedure would be to have a Constitutional Convention call, and then it would go back to the people for their vote for constitutional change. I believe, honestly, if it's ever a chance to have a state income tax in Tennessee, there'll have to be a major and total educational program to sell the people on what is going to transpire. And also, there'll have to be tied to this, if you have a state income tax, that there would have to be some relief of other taxes, individual taxes.
Were you surprised that in this year's gubernatorial race, where you had so many candidates, that none of them sought to make that an issue from the standpoint of attempting to educate the public on the ramifications?
Not really surprised, because of the fact that the so-called man on the street in Tennessee is opposed to a state income tax. And I think it would be, if a candidate were to come out during a campaign for a state income tax, I think it would contribute to defeat, truthfully. I personally...
How about within the context of tax reform, though?
Well, in the context of tax reform, I'm not sure about this, but I think that some candidates said that there could be a need for tax reform in the state. But to just come out and out for a state income tax, I don't recall any candidate being for it. I'd say that, tell you that I think that Tennessee will probably, if we continue at the growth of expenditure that we have now, that we will probably have to have tax reform in the future. You know, Tennessee, from the years of 1962 to 1972 in our state, we were the third largest state to get new industrial jobs in the United States. And I believe it's predicted that we're just shy of 4 million people, that in the next 16 years, that our population growth in Tennessee will be 25% more. They're shooting at a situation where we are, that maintaining a progressive government, that we'll have just shy of 5 million people in the next 16 years. So this will bring on orderly manner of tax reform, in my judgment, it'll be required.
And tax reform then would have to include consideration of the income tax.
Well, it'd have to include consideration. Of course, all this depends on what happens at the national level. I mean, we're looking at, I think in politics today, you've got to look down the road at a plan, and I think we're looking at national health insurance. Our welfare programs are almost, I believe, 80% have been federalized today. We're not putting as much money in welfare as we were a few years ago. Basically, I think in our state, from my knowledge, is the county governments operate on real estate taxes. The state government operates basically on sales tax. And the federal government operates on an income tax from Tennessee. I'm talking about our people of Tennessee. And this is the way that our government, this is the way that the Tennesseans fund the three governments, the local government with property, the state government with sales tax, the national government with income tax. And, you know, just about well, half of the revenues in Tennessee today that come into our system in Tennessee come from the sales tax. I believe that, honestly, in regards to the federal income tax, that there should be a base figure where a man can live and support his family before he should make something, some $12,000 or some figure of $15,000 or in the future, whatever the figure might be, before he's required to ever pay any kind of state income tax. I believe if a base figure of exemption were put into the law, that the people would not be that much opposed to it. But I think the so-called man that's paying the burden of taxes in Tennessee is entitled to this today.
I want to ask you about the governor's race. Do you really think Blanton's going to win?
I think Ray Blanton's got the opportunity to put this state together, and will have the help to be successful.
Impression we sort of got, we went to the unity luncheon, mm-hmm. or the press conference afterwards.
And you talking about the candidates the day we were in there with the
candidates.
Yeah.
And is that all show, or is it more significant than that?
I believe it's more significant than show. I've talked to some of the leading nominees. For example, Jake Butcher, there's no show. He's totally committed to help Ray Blanton. To help the party regain the governor's chair.
Does that include financial support?
Yes.
That's the real issue, isn't it? Blanton is, it's not out of loyalty to him, but it's really a, am I correct that is there a feeling on the part of Democrats in Tennessee that if they lose the governor's office this year, they may lose it for some time to come?
Well, of course, that's the fear that I personally have, and I assume that's a correct.
Is that the unifying?
But you got to go back now. You got to go back to you know, I'm not a history student, and all I know is what I've read myself. But we go back to the Gordon Browning days, when Governor Browning came on with the first real farm-to-market rural road program ever inaugurated in this state. A great Democrat with a terrific record of public service. So go back to Jim McCord days as governor. Who? Okay.
The grassroots people in Tennessee are basically Democrats.
The grassroots people of Tennessee are Democrats. Blanton is representative of really of the soil of the rural McNary County boy, and he represents the grassroots element of Tennessee. The problem in Tennessee with the people that have become independents is that the people of our state could not buy candidates like George McGovern. You know, and you got to look, you know, look at the record. The people in Tennessee could not buy George McGovern. The people, Nixon's always been considered the outstanding vote-getter in Tennessee, but the facts are that George Wallace defeated Tennessee, defeated Nixon in Tennessee in the presidential race. So the grassroots Tennesseans are Democrats. It's the candidates that we've had that have lost our seats in the legislature. It's the candidates we've had that lost statewide and nationally. And I think Blanton is basically grassroots.
Isn't there, as I understand it, isn't there some Democratic effort at recruiting candidates for the legislature?
Oh, yes. I made a total effort this year with my leadership. Two complete trips across the state.
Is that how Annabelle Clement O'Brien got
yes.
in?
Oh, yes. I think Annabelle would tell you. I asked Annabelle Clement O'Brien to run three times before she ever agreed to run to the House. I think this is what it's all about.
Well, what do you look for in terms of a candidate for the legislature as a Democrat?
A candidate that can be representative of the people of his or her district.
How do you find these people?
you have to basically you can't go into a rural area and have a very liberal candidate. I think the party is broad in Tennessee. At the same time, you can't go into an urban area and have a most conservative candidate that you could run. You've got to fit the candidate of our party to the representative district that they're running in. And we tried to do that this year, and we worked hard to do that, and brings all of our party together. And in my judgment, our party is made up of the people of Tennessee, and we're the people's party. And we haven't been coordinating that, put in the effort and the coordination that we should have in the past when we were losing. So this will be the test this year to see how we come out. When you write your book, if we're right, we'll have an increase in the House of the Democratic Party. And if my strategy is wrong, then we'll have a decrease. We made two trips across the state working candidates and asking people to run that we thought were representative of the people of that district before the primaries, and I've just completed a trip all the way across the state working on the general election now with our nominees since the primaries.
Did the state party also, are you working with Sasser in that?
Yes. I'm one of those people that like to play on the team. I work with, I've been working very closely work, for example, with the state Democratic chairman on the what we call the great Supreme Court that's elected in Tennessee. We felt that I believe that I'm right. A member of the Supreme Court has not been elected, or the Supreme Court has not been elected by the people of Tennessee in 50 years. We in the legislature thought it was time to let the people of Tennessee elect the Supreme Court.
How significant was that election from the standpoint of the Democratic Party in Tennessee?
That's a milestone of significance to start with, in my judgment. I think my hope and my wishes are that that's the first step in restoring the Democratic Party to total control of Tennessee. And, you know, we offered these candidates, they were excellent candidates, and they had the ability to draw a heavy vote and be elected by a big majority.
What sort of support does the state party give legislative candidates?
The state party, as we said earlier, of course, the Democrats have been in trouble in Tennessee in the last few years. The state party has been in debt. They have not been able to contribute any financial support to the House or Senate members. In turn, Lieutenant Governor Wilder, the Speaker of the Senate, and myself tried to hold on to the party as best we could during the years of the Dunn governorship and the Republicans having both Senate offices until we could get to where we are now. And we had fundraising affairs across the state and were able to raise some funds for the House and Senate, and were able actually to help make some contributions through our organizations and efforts and fundraising to give the state executive committee some money to help pay on their debt. And we did that this last year and also this year. So we've tried to hang on as best we could until we get to where we are today and help the party and help the state organization and help our respective houses. And we haven't done the best job, but we've tried on.
Well, these candidates that you're recruiting this year are recruited. Through these fundraising efforts, are you able to make campaign contributions to their legislative?
We just recently have made campaign contributions all over the state.
How much are they? I mean, roughly.
Roughly $500 to $1,000. Hello?
Is that a new development?
Oh, yes. I don't know that. I don't ever recall ever when legislators have had any money to start their campaigns on. And incidentally, this money that we're able to contribute, I think our caucus, we're on public, you know, we sponsored the ethics and disclosure bill last year in the House, which the Republicans actually, I couldn't get enough votes to pass it, but the money that we're able to contribute has been totally disclosed in the media, all over the state, to the press, to all media, and this money is money that the caucus has made through barbecues and receptions and those things in the last 2 years. And I'm hopeful that we'll have between $80,000 and $100,000 to spend in House races.
Now, Senator Gore introduced Blanton at that Saturday meeting. Am I correct on that?
Yes.
We talked to Senator Gore afterwards. Is Blanton, I'm trying to understand, you know, Blanton's strategy. I get the feeling that a lot of people are out there waiting and willing to help who may not have necessarily supported him in the primary.
I found this, as you know, immediately when the primary was over, we started, I took the Democratic caucus chairman, Gentry Crowd, and myself, made this trip across the state, and we found all the Democrats that were in other camps willing and waiting to get started in their respective areas.
Isn't his basic problem to broaden his base?
Oh, I think he's got no question about that. That's what he needs to do, and I think he's working on that now. I happen to be involved in helping him.
I mean, would he be doing such things as just asking Senator Gore to actually stump for him?
Oh, I think so. I think so.
I think
that he already has.
How about such things as public endorsement of Harold Ford's congressional race?
I don't know what that situation is with Harold Ford. I don't know whether Ford and Blanton are so far apart that they, you know, would be impossible to get together. I just don't know about that. Ford has been a former member of our House, and we had our meeting in Memphis last Thursday. His brother now, his younger brother, has been elected to the House, and he was not present. His older brother, John, came by when he was elected to the Senate and joined in our meeting. We discussed legislative and Senate races, and that's the governor's race was not discussed, except many people volunteered that they were going to help Ray Moore to run with him.
But
let me say here that you mentioned Gore.